capital to continue to invest in insane enterprises that only lock us in further to a global warming world. That's a huge area. Well, so JP Morgan Chase is the biggest funder of fossil fuels to the order of $300 billion plus. This is from 2016 to 2020 figures. Citibank is the second most, $240 billion. Wells Fargo is next. Bank of America is next. Then RBC, Barclays, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, regular protests, flyers at those. I mean, maybe people might consider taking their money out of those banks. I don't know. Who knows? Then there's the hedge funds and the equity firms. They play a key role in investing in financing the fossil fuel industry. I have an article about that. You, too, can find all these things. I know last week, like, unfortunately, more times than I'd like to acknowledge, I say I'm going to link to things, and then I don't. I apologize for that. I'm not as on it as I used to be. But it's 8:59. No one wants to hear all this. This is the end of the show. I thank everybody for listening. Thank people for contributing. Thanks again, Ty and Sonia, for being board operators. I'm going to talk to you next week with Jacqueline Keeler, my co-host on Second Wednesdays. Bye-bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7
FM. Want an impactful way to volunteer for KBOO? Believe in KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change? Then apply to be a member of the KBOO Board of Directors. Our KBOO Board guides our strategic work and represents the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application. If you need a paper copy mailed to you, call the station or email applicationboard@kboo.org. That's one word, applicationboard@kboo.org. The deadline to apply is July 25th, 2021.
Did you miss the Soul and Hip Hop Marathon on Juneteenth weekend? No worries. You can go to kboo.fm/soul2021 to listen to the archive show. You can also snag a limited edition soul and hip hop t-shirt before July 7th to show your support for the music and programming you love. Again, you can catch the Soul and Hip Hop Marathon and snag a limited edition t-shirt at kboo.fm/soul2021.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week.
The now traditional story of Juneteenth is somewhat problematic and obscures more than it reveals.
People of all stripes and colors and styles and types or whatever reason we use to divide God's creatures from each other ought to be happy when slavery no longer exists because it's a celebration of freedom.
I'm Stephanie Schubert with Pacifica Network. And today on Sprouts, the history of Juneteenth. Akua Holt from Pacifica's COVID Race and Democracy sets the stage in Galveston, Texas, where Juneteenth was first celebrated.
June 19, 1865 marks the origin of Juneteenth on Galveston Island. The official celebration began in 1866, commemorating the freedom of African people from settler colonialism 2.5 years after President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Before the passage of the Juneteenth legislation in the House and Senate last week, only 4 new holidays were added to the national calendar in the past 100 years. June 17, 2021, President Joe Biden signed the historic legislation making Juneteenth the 12th federal holiday. It's the first new federal holiday since Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day was created in 1983. Longtime Fort Worth, Texas, Juneteenth advocate and esteemed elder, Miss Opal Lee, 94 years, traveled to Washington, D.C. to observe history, stating her ancestors have waited 155 years, 11 months, and 28 days. Biden said, "This is a day of profound weight and profound power, a day in which we remember the moral stain, the terrible toll that slavery took on this country and continues to take." Mimi Rosenberg of WBAI New York talks to Dr. Gerald Horn, Morris Professor of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston, about the Juneteenth link between Mexico and Texas.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg with a Juneteenth special to celebrate and commemorate and remind that those who believe in freedom and the realization of the promise of democracy cannot rest until it comes. Joining us now is historian and author of more than 30 books, Dr. Gerald Horn, who will unearth and lay bare the complex confluence of circumstances that surrounded Juneteenth, 1865, as we both applaud the recognition of Juneteenth as a national holiday, which provides us with an opportunity to have a thorough remembrance of this horrific system that was slavery, and for an American reckoning with its legacy of settler colonialism and the development of plantation capitalism. Good Juneteenth, Dr. Horn.
First of all, let me say that I support the recent action that has moved to make Juneteenth a new federal national holiday to mark the abolition of slavery. That is long overdue and well worthwhile. However, the now traditional story of Juneteenth is somewhat problematic and obscures more than it reveals. The traditional story is that General Gordon Granger of the U.S. military showed up in Galveston, Texas, a major slave port, by the way, on June 19th, 1865, and told the enslaved that you're free. And supposedly, they didn't know that. They didn't know about the Emancipation Proclamation. But of course, the Emancipation Proclamation, January 1st, 1863, by Abraham Lincoln, only served to free those where the Lincoln government had no jurisdiction. He certainly didn't have jurisdiction in the Confederate state that was Texas. And it was a war-fighting measure. It was meant to spur the enslaved, particularly black men, to join the Union Army, which they did in profusion, and helped to turn the tide, which had been going in the direction of the Confederate forces until they started streaming in the army of the Lincoln government in profusion. What's interesting about Juneteenth as well is that General Granger shows up with 75,000 black troops. Why did he feel that he needed so many? And this gets us closer to the reality of what was going on. The reality is that Texas was less damaged by the U.S. Civil War than any other slave state. Texas, in some ways, was the keystone of the arch of the attempt to overthrow the U.S. government and extend slavery forevermore. In the aftermath of the so-called surrender of the Confederates in April 1865, the idea of the Confederates was to regroup in Texas. When Jefferson Davis, the president of the so-called Confederate States of America, was captured fleeing Richmond, the capital, he was en route to Texas, accompanied by a man by the name of Francis Lubbock, who, of course, his name has been bequeathed to Lubbock, Texas, a major West Texas metropolis. The idea was that Texas would not only seek to continue the war, but it would then join French-controlled Mexico. During the U.S. Civil War, the French opportunistically had seized Mexico. I'm sure you're familiar with the Mexican-American holiday Cinco de Mayo, 5th of May, which marks a major victory over the French troops in Mexico. Texas had seceded from Mexico in the first instance in 1836 in order to extend slavery, because Mexico, under president of African descent, Vicente Guerrero, had moved to abolish slavery. And Sam Houston, Stephen F. Austin and the other pro-slavery comrades were not having it, so they set up an independent state, the Lone Star Republic, which became a major slave trading nation during its brief existence from 1836 to 1845. The Lone Star flag could be found off the coast of Angola, the coast of Brazil, the coast of Cuba. If you look at your map, there's a straight shot from Galveston to Cuba, and many Africans were transshipped from Galveston, Texas, to Cuba as late as 1860. You had hundreds of Congolese being smuggled improperly and illicitly into Galveston. But what happens is that independent Texas could not take the pressure from revolutionary Haiti and its allies in the abolitionist movement, not least in London, and it crawled into the Union in 1845, where it's been ever since. The idea was to rejoin French-backed Mexico and then extend slavery to take more enslaved Africans south of the border. During the U.S. Civil War, since Texas was the least damaged of the slave-owning states, in neighboring Louisiana, its central city, New Orleans, had been seized by the Lincoln government early in the conflict. So you had slave-owning forces from Louisiana, from Arkansas, et cetera, who were bringing, quote, their, unquote, Africans into Texas. So the Texas enslaved population was growing spectacularly and exponentially during the U.S. Civil War. The idea was to drag them into Mexico, where the decree of the 1820s, which had abolished slavery, would be overturned, and slavery would receive an extended lease on life. The idea was for the 75,000 black troops to be sort of a guarantor that that would not happen, because the Lincoln government, they were poor sociologists in the sense that they had this idea that blacks were better fighters, but they didn't apparently realize that that was because of a hundreds of years tradition in North America, where if you were a black soldier and you were defeated on the battlefield, you were enslaved. And so that gave these black soldiers quite an incentive to fight with ferocity. So what happens is that the U.S. government set up these 75,000 black troops as sort of an anvil on the border with Mexico, and then the anti-French forces in Mexico, led by Benito Juarez, who, as you know, the city that the twin city of El Paso, Texas, Ciudad Juarez, is named after him. He was the leader of so-called liberal Republican forces in Mexico. They were the hammer. And so the French-backed forces were caught between the anvil of the U.S. so-called colored troops on one side and the forces of Benito Juarez pressing from the other side. And so Juneteenth, in some ways, is a story of black-brown unity that defeats French colonialism, but somehow it's morphed into a kind of white savior narrative where Gorton Granger shows up and tells the Negroes, you know what, you people are free.
Dr. Gerald Horn, thanks for gracing us on this first nationally recognized Juneteenth.
Longtime advocate and fighter for social justice, attorney Mimi Rosenberg, host and producer of Equal Rights and Justice Radio, WBAI, New York. President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation had officially outlawed slavery in Texas and other states at war with the Union on January 1, 1863. Texas resisted and ignored the order until June 19, 1865. In many parts of Texas, freedmen and women purchased land or emancipation grounds for Juneteenth gatherings, including Emancipation Park in Houston, purchased in 1872 by Reverend Jack Yates and others. We now go to Sam Collins on the island of Galveston, co-chair and historian of the Juneteenth Legacy Project, to discover more about this historic day and the unveiling of the Juneteenth mural. Sam Collins is with us today. He's the co-chair and historian for the Juneteenth Legacy Project, also unveiling this year 5,000 square foot art installation and storytelling space that will be dedicated on June 19th, 2021 on the island of Galveston, the birthplace of Juneteenth.
I'm doing great. Welcome to you also to be on this program. I appreciate the invitation and look forward to a wonderful conversation about Galveston, Juneteenth, and freedom.
Let's start there. Let's talk about Juneteenth and freedom. A lot of people don't know before the whole Gordon Granger story, there's a backstory to that, because Africans were on the island of Galveston celebrated Juneteenth without it being a state holiday.
Absolutely. From the very first event here on June 19th, 1865, we've been celebrating ever since. Last year in 2020, Juneteenth became popular, but it has always been important to the residents here locally, to the descendants of the formerly enslaved and the former enslaved immediately following the issuance of General Order Number 3 here in Galveston. And this year, I want to make sure that we emphasize that Galveston was occupied by United States colored troops. Newspaper reports from July of 1865 says, Galveston is now occupied by colored troops. That was a telegraph that went out on June 20th. Growing up here in Texas, no history book in elementary, junior high, high school, or even college told me that 75% of the soldiers that came into Texas, Union forces, were United States colored troops. I had heard it before last year. Harry Jones had done a lot of the work with the research with the African American Civil War Museum. Harry passed in 2018, I believe. There were many others that had been talking about the USCT, but it really wasn't in our mainstream classroom. We're not taught this history. As the light is being shined on this mural, we're highlighting the contributions of the USCT to their own agency and freedom, not only for themselves, but for other enslaved individuals.
Very important to know. And they didn't come to Galveston to play. They came to Galveston to liberate.
Absolutely. My grandmother has a friend, Attorney Faye Williams, that she grew up with. They're both almost 90 years old. And she says her grandfather told her the oral history. It was not a piece of paper that freed the enslaved people, but the men with the guns. So over my shoulder, you can see the contraband of war and then the soldier in the Union uniform. That contraband of war, May 23rd, 1861, these three individuals ran for freedom to the Union camp. In far corner, you can see the white officer behind me. That was Benjamin Butler right here. And he was the one that would not return the enslaved people to the Confederacy and labeled them as contraband, because Confederate officers wanted them to be returned because of the fugitive slave law. And he sent word back to them, you're a foreign nation, we're at war. Anything that we seize of yours that is considered property, we can use for our benefit. So since you consider them property, we're going to keep them. But more importantly, those men and individuals that followed them not only went to the Union side to fight as soldiers with their physical bodies, but they took intel. They knew the land. They knew the territory. They were able to say, hey, we could cross at the creek here. We could go past the river here. You need to go 5 miles down this way to get behind enemy lines. Not only were they physically contributing intel so that the Union could win. So this is a very key point that many individuals don't give them credit for.
And a lot of people don't know that Galveston was under siege.
Yeah, Galveston was under Union control as early as October of 1862. But then there was a Battle of Galveston, January 1st, 1863. The Confederacy won, so they took back control of Galveston until June 19th or till June of 1865, because the Union Navy had arrived as early as late April of 65, trying to get Galveston and Texas to surrender. They did not officially surrender until June 2nd, and they were not under Granger's control until he came in on June 19th. He had General Order Number 1 that gave him control of Texas. General Order Number 2 helped him to set up his staff. And then General Orders 3, 4, and 5 were actually written and signed by Major Frederick Emery, who is listed in General Order Number 2 under Granger's command. Granger is an accidental kind of hero. He wasn't really sympathetic to the enslaved people. Matter of fact, unlike Benjamin Butler, when enslaved people would run away to Union sides where Granger was prior to him getting here to Galveston, he actually was returning them to the slave owners in the Confederacy. So Granger was not some, you know, hero just trying to do this. He was just the officer in charge ordered to Texas, and he gets a lot of the credit But Major Frederick Emory is the one that wrote General Order Number 3, and I believe he's the reason the words absolute equality are in the second sentence of General Order Number 3, where it says, this involves an absolute equality. So the name of the mural is absolute equality. The words across the bottom are absolute equality. And the bottom line is we want absolute equality.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Today we are talking about the history of Juneteenth, the newest national holiday signed into law last week. We just heard from Professor of History Gerald Horn and Sam Collins, co-chair and historian of the Juneteenth Legacy Project. For the second half of our show, we return to this week's producer, Akua Holt.
June is also Black Music Month. Musical director of the Community Music Center of Houston, Dr. Ann Lundy, takes us on a journey of African-American spirituals, the early days of African musical evolution in America.
As we think about Juneteenth and the trials of our many African-American ancestors expressed through music, as a musician, I really enjoy playing some of those songs. I'm not a vocalist, I'm an instrumentalist, but I love playing some of those songs, and I'm hoping that it will remind people of the importance that music has in the human experience. It's always, no matter where you go on this planet, I'm sure you can find somebody somewhere expressing music in some way or another. So as we remember Juneteenth, this is just one of the songs of the enslaved people that were singing about how throughout the trials and tribulations that they were dealing with in slavery, that their connection was to God, and these spirituals were reminding us that, you know, soon I will be done, the trials and tribulations will be over. That was one of the spirituals from way past when. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. There's a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. So again, as we think about Juneteenth and the importance that music and specifically spirituals played in the African-American community, that's one of my favorites. I know there are many, many, many others. But I guess it kind of reminds me of my grandma and the way she used to make me feel that even when things were not going on, there's a balm, there's something that could help you get through these tough times. And I think sometimes with these times we're dealing with, that there's a balm for everybody, and somehow we will get through this.
Special thanks to Dr. Ann Lundy and the Community Music Center of Houston. We salute African-American artists who have made significant contributions to the evolution of music, not only in America, but around the world. Mimi Rosenberg of WBAI New York spoke to Dr. Tiffany Crutcher live from the Juneteenth Freedom Festival in Tulsa, Oklahoma. She's the twin sister of Terrence Crutcher, who was shot and killed September 2016 by police officer Betty Jo Shelby in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He was unarmed.
Dr. Tiffany Crutcher is joining us from the Juneteenth Freedom Festival in Tulsa. Dr. Tiffany Crutcher is the founder of the Terrence Crutcher Foundation, named after her twin brother, Terrence Crutcher, who was unarmed when he was gunned down by Tulsa, Oklahoma police. Dr. Crutcher is also the founder of the Demanding a Just Tulsa Coalition and the great-granddaughter of a survivor of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre, where mobs of white rioters burned down her great-grandmother's prosperous community known as Black Wall Street. Dr. Crutcher, who is convening the Juneteenth commemoration in Tulsa to demand a just Tulsa, where thousands have already begun to gather, reminded me when asked to be with us that emancipation was not easily won, and that we who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Dr. Tiffany Crutcher, welcome.
does Juneteenth mean to me is pretty loaded, especially when you think about the continual harm that we still face as a people. We were already free, you know, and then we were enslaved. Here in Oklahoma, Juneteenth is special to us because we didn't hear about it for 2 years after. It was 2 years later, and we got word from Texas. So it was about 1867. And so Tulsa, Oklahoma has one of the largest Juneteenth festivals in the nation, and we do celebrate. For me, I can't help back but reflect 100 years ago, almost to the day and month, when my great-grandmother Rebecca Brown Crutcher had to flee in fear of her life from racial terror violence in the grim days of Jim Crow. She jumped on the back of a wagon and fled off to Muskogee, which is a small creek town, I would say northeast of Tulsa. I didn't know about it at all. There was a conspiracy of silence. It was erased from the textbooks, the history books, and I went to some of the best schools in Tulsa. Carver Junior High, which was right on Greenwood, Booker T. Washington High School, a prominent high school, magnet school here in Tulsa, and they did not teach us one thing in Oklahoma history. We learned about the Trail of Tears and Robert E. Lee and things of that nature, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, but I did not know that the United States government, the Oklahoma National Guard, bombed its own country because there were black people, prosperous, thriving black people, who did pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They had their own boots, their own cars, their own airplanes. They were doctors, lawyers. They owned theaters, hotels. They were educators. I can go on and on. Didn't have to go outside of their community for anything. They were black excellence. And then you had jealous, envious white people who incited a riot all over a lie. Kind of reminds me of what happened on January the 6th when mobs of white rioters stormed the nation's capital all over a lie. And so history does repeat itself. So mobs of white rioters crossed those railroad tracks, and before they burned and killed, they looted all of our nice belongings and stole from us. And then in 48 hours, a prosperous black community was decimated. Generational wealth stolen. Not allowed to file insurance claims. Yes, black people had insurance back in 1921. They put their money in the bank. Bank records were burned. And then fast forward, almost 100 years later, my twin brother, Terrence Crutcher, was killed by the same police department, the same state-sanctioned violence that killed innocent black men of Greenwood and burned it down. The police department that deputized white civilians and Klansmen. This is the same culture and same state-sanctioned violence that killed Terrence Crutcher in 2016 with his hands in the air. Helicopter loomed over him. Police officers said he looked like a bad dude. They didn't render first aid. They went to go check on the police officer, Betty Shelby, to make sure she was okay. And then 9-8 months later, she was acquitted on first-degree manslaughter charges. She got back pay. She got her job back. She's making money teaching other police officers how to survive the aftermath of a critical incident. No atonement for my family. No civil case for my family. No atonement for my great-grandmother's community. And the current survivors that still live, they're saying get over it, just like they're telling us to get over the massacre. And then here we come to this past January, where I lost my mother to COVID-19, January the 14th, 2021, where blacks are disproportionately impacted by this lethal virus. State of Oklahoma, our governor didn't believe in mask mandates. They didn't believe in the CDC guidelines. They thought it was a hoax, and I lost my mother. So generational trauma has reverberated through my family's history. I think about the racially biased policing that's going on. I think about the red line. I think about the black community of Greenwood now, where we don't own anything because of gentrification and colonization. I think about our schools that are under-resourced and that are school-to-prison pipelines. I can go on and on. No sidewalks, no amenities. And here we are, encroaching on Juneteenth, where the House and the Senate just declared it a national holiday. But my question is to you, but are we really free? Are we really free?
Special thanks to Dr. Ann Lundy and the Community Music Center of Houston.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to The History of Juneteenth. Our contributor this week was Akua Holt of Pacifica's COVID, Race, and Democracy. Special thanks to NIA Cultural Center and Mimi Rosenberg of WBAI and Dr. Obidike Kamau of KPFT for sharing segments with us. Featured guests today were historian Gerald Horn, co-chair and historian of the Juneteenth Legacy Project, Sam Collins, musical director Dr. Ann Lundy, and Dr. Tiffany Crutcher. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Brian David at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
Today on Wings, Janelle Orsi, author of the book Practicing Law in the Sharing Economy. The Sustainable Economies Law Center she co-founded works to give advice on localism and reform laws and policies that hinder community sharing.
We have so many laws that are designed to protect people from one another, and sharing is people helping each other out, and there are actually laws that prevent people from helping each other out. There's a lot to learn.